go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 53 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. B-Man, today, tonight, I am conflicted. I have been for the past few months. I've had this thought brewing in my head, in my that childish brain of mine. I want to read more. I used to read a lot. I hated reading in school because it was mandatory and I didn't have the choice of what I could read. But then after college, I found myself enjoying reading because I could actually choose what I wanted to read. I didn't have to worry about having to do a report on it. There were no deadlines. I could take my time. I could read at my own pace, read one book at a time instead of, you know, five different books for five different classes. But I've gotten away from that because I'm fully employed, which is a total bummer. But then I do stand up and this project Verbal Graffiti. So time is spare, but I'm trying to carve out some more time to do reading on the side. But again, I'm conflicted because I do not retain information well. It's quite pitiful. I could read a novel, and if you ask me 2 weeks from now, like what the characters' names are, I'm going to struggle. Like, there's a good chance I won't be able to tell you the names. Even if it was like a 500-page book that I loved, fiction novel, got into it. I love reading a novel when you get to the halfway point and your heart starts to sink because you're so invested in a story and you know, oh, that we're more than halfway through and there's going to be an end point and it's going to be over. And that does make my heart weep a little bit. That's when you know you're reading a good novel, in my opinion, anyway. But I'm conflicted because, yeah, I want to read, but if I don't retain any information, it is a waste of my time. But reading, it has to be good for my mind. I want to do it so that I have more information to pull from to give to all of you. It will broaden my sense of humor. The stories, the historical notes that I can mention, I think it'd make me a more well-balanced individual. Even in my age, I'm trying to improve myself for myself. To tell you how despicable my mind is, I have a master's degree in history, which is I completely waste. I didn't use that degree at all. I wrote not my thesis. I went to Southern Connecticut State University, a complete joke of a university, an institution. My professor, he gives a choice. You could either write like a 150-page thesis or do four like 20-page essays. Of course, the B-Man, the option B was easier, so I did that. My main essay that I wrote for my master's degree was on numismatics, which is the study of money, of coins. You can learn a lot about a culture, a civilization, a people by their money. Because as we can see with our money or even modern money, money usually has your leaders, your politicians, the people who have made an imprint on your society. Those are often the people that are on your money. So you can study a civilization through those coins. I don't remember any of it. I know what numismatics is. I could explain, as I just did, what numismatics is, what the study of it, how it's done. But I spent probably upwards of a year studying all these coins. I don't remember. I can't tell you any of the coins from Rome, from Greece, from anywhere in Europe that I studied. And I did do a U.S. and Western because, you know, I'm a white guy and apparently, you know, that makes me a terrible, terrible, despicable person. But I don't remember any of it. And I have this book now that I want to read. I'm reading the introduction. It is, what's it called? 10 Days That Shook the World by John Reed. He was a first-person account of the Bolshevik Revolution with Lenin and Stalin. I've heard a lot. I'm scrolling through X, and a lot of people are comparing what's happening today in Western culture to the Bolsheviks in the early 1900s, 1910s, teens. And so I want to know, like, what was that all about? But I do know if I read that book, I'll be smart for 2 weeks. I'll be able to point to stories, events that happened then. But after that two-week period, after I read the book, it's going to be marshmallow. It's going to dissipate. It's going to disappear like a cloud in the sky. So do I want to invest a month reading that book when I'm not going to be able to remember it? The yin and yang, the pull, this pulling inside my head, the struggle I have. I've gotten through the introduction, 5 pages of the introduction. Do any of you struggle like this with reading? Because I scrolling through X and Instagram, it can't be good for the mind. I want to have a long form paragraphs. I think that's better for us, for our development. Well, I'll keep you updated. Who knows? Okay, this one's more. Let's get more fun. This comes from a subreddit, the Starbucks subreddit. How do I show my appreciation besides tipping? I'm a MF, I believe that's Monday through Friday, regular at my local Starbucks, and I almost always see the same baristas every morning, so I've gotten to know them over the course of several months. They're really great, and I want to do something else to show my appreciation besides just tipping. Do you all have any suggestions? What have your regulars done that you liked? It does feel like tipping by itself is inadequate at this point. Right away, I'm going to tell you to stop going to Starbucks and support a local coffee shop or cafe. Starbucks is a behemoth. So us here at Verbal Graffiti, buy local, drink local if you can, if there's one close by. Be willing to drive a few extra miles to get that local brew. The question I have is, why do you feel as though tipping is not enough? Just tip whatever you tip. Hopefully it's 20%, but whether it's 15, 20, 30%, whatever it is you tip, smile at the barista, say thank you, and look that barista in the eye as you put your cash in the tip jar. And that is my big thing. Tip with cash. That way the barista does not have to pay taxes on the tip that you give him or her. He or she, I don't know the English on that because I don't read enough books. What you need to realize is this is a Starbucks, and why I suggest going to a local coffee house is because Starbucks is a corporate entity. When you give this barista the money for whatever drink you're buying, 97% of it is going to Starbucks. That's why we need to tip the baristas, because that's how the baristas make a living, off the back of us caffeine addicts. Because Starbucks, they ain't paying them a living wage. Maybe they do, but not enough to, you know, actually have their own apartment and a car and to be able to vacation and buy the latest pair of sneakers or whatever it is baristas are into, hair dye. It does seem like a lot of baristas like coloring their hair, like clown colors, like blue or red. I've noticed that over the years. What should you, though, if tipping is not enough for you, and it should be, this ain't high school. Like, why are you trying to get extra credit? Right? What you want to get an extra, get a sticker, a star sticker on your exam? Like, just tip to 30%, smile, and go about your day. Don't yap with them. The biggest thing you can do as a customer for the Starbucks baristas is tip one, and two is don't order something super annoying and time consuming to make. I'll post something here because I have noticed. I scroll through the Starbucks subreddit and baristas love bitching about customers' orders. And there's a thing on the Starbucks subreddit where baristas will show the cup with this, how many ingredients the customers ask for, like you know, like 7 scoops of vanilla cream and three pumps of caramel and 2 shots of espresso and dairy-free whipped cream. You know the shit I'm talking about. That's what they despise. So have a simple latte, simple coffee, Americana, tip well, you'll be good. That's all the barista wants from you. Stop trying to be a goody two-shoe and get beyond what you are. And what you are is a customer. And whatever you give the baristas, because you're not going to listen to me, you're going to give them something. So let me tell you what not to get them. Do not get them... Don't make them any baked goods, brownies, cookies, sugar cookies. Don't give them gift cards. They get that from everybody else. Stop. Just be original. Be original. All right. If you really want to stand out, you really want to stand out to your local barista at Starbucks, the B-Man suggests you fiddle yourself that morning with your panties on, then give those used panties, those stinky ones, to the barista you're attracted to. Do that. Or find the barista's phone number, then occasionally send some nudes to the barista. Or find the guy in the takeout at Starbucks, at the takeout window. Invite him over to your SUV and give him a blowjob. Everybody, hey, 7 a.m. It's 7 a.m. Everyone needs a perk up. So give the takeout guy a blowjob. That's the B-man's. That's my answer. I also think you're not going to do that. So, I'm a complete waste to you on this post. Well, what you need to realize, and which I don't think you realize this, and this is why I'm going to say it, is you're never going to get past that counter. That counter that separates the baristas from the customers is real and it's metaphorical. Those baristas, whatever gift you end up giving them, they're not going to invite you to the bar after. They're not going to invite you to the bachelorette party. They're not going to invite you on vacation with all the other baristas at Myrtle Beach next month. You're not going to get into Starbucks group chat. You're not going to be the one who gets to talk shit about the other customers with the terrible orders because you are a customer and not a barista. The sooner you get that through your head, the better your time at Starbucks will be. Tip 20%, keep your mouth shut. Keep the line moving. That's all you got to do. You cannot be, the more I think about this, we are polar opposites. There was a time when my mother, she had broken her ankle and she was a director of nurses. So she had to drive all around the state, but she couldn't drive because of her ankle. I believe at the time I was a bum and unemployed. So I would drive her each morning to and from work. And we would stop each morning at Dunkin' Donuts. At the time it was called Dunkin' Donuts, to get my mom whatever her coffee drink was. At that time, I had not started my coffee endeavor. So we would go there each morning through drive-through, and within a few days, the drive-through person knew both of us, knew my mom's order. It made me very queasy, uncomfortable. I did not like that the drive-through person knew who I was, even though I wasn't the one getting the coffee. It made me so uncomfortable that I made my mom go to different Dunkin' Donuts each week so that the drive-through person would not recognize us. There's something about a stranger knowing what I like. It's almost a breach of my personhood. I don't know. Like, just having somebody know what my order is and I don't even have to say it and they start making it. There's something about that that's just not right. I don't know. I'm a weirdo. There's something I'm trying to think of a vocab word. What's the vocab word, B-Man? What's the vocab word? It's uncomfortable. That's a boring word. I don't like when people know things about me. It's why I keep my lives separate. My friends, my comics, my family, I like to keep those orbits separate. And when there's some rando barista or takeout person who knows my order, that's why I don't order takeout. It's not the money. I just don't want to keep seeing the same people every day and then having them find out things about me. So yeah, just tip the person and shut the fuck up. Drink your coffee. Let's go watch some photos. Episode 53, segment number 2, the B-Man. I have a fondness for pimple popping videos. I need to actively refrain from watching one pimple popping video online, because if I watch one, my day is ruined. My past Sunday was ruined. 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., I was on Reddit and YouTube going on a deep dive of watching new pimple popping videos. I cannot get enough of them. It gives me such joy to see that pop and the pus shoot out and hit the mirror, whether I'm watching it or popping one of my own on my forehead. It makes me giddy. And once I do one, I need another. And I wasted a wonderful summer afternoon, 85 degrees sunny, in the depths of my bedroom, watching strangers just destroy their faces and backs and necks and chests. And wherever there was a cyst, the B-Man was there watching it explode or attempted to be exploded. I do not enjoy watching Dr. Pimple Popper. That is the very attractive lady with the TV show who, that's her show. It's just popping pimples and abscesses and boils and cysts. I don't like her, not her, but her show. I don't enjoy it because I don't, stop with the fluff. I don't need the backstory, the sob story of how this guy has a Siamese twin on his neck filled with pus and how it's ruined his life and his livelihood. I don't care about that. Give the B-Man the money shot. I want to see you cut into it, make it explode, and see the pus just come out of the skin. That's what I enjoy. And it occurred to me that, oh, much like porn, I prefer amateur content. I am an amateur pimple popper video guy. I get such pleasure when I see like two friends or like a family helping each other out pop a pimple, where like they're popping the huge pimple, but then on the side of the video, you will see the dining room table filled with like empty beer bottles, or you'll see a couple, like the wife's on like the toilet while the husband's on like bending her over with like the iPhone so you can see the back of her neck. I watched this one video this weekend, this past Sunday. This guy, this husband, he had a cyst on like the back of his neck near his ear, and he said he had it for 20 years. So his wife was like poking it, and she put a thumbtack inside the cyst, and it got stuck. Like she removed her hand, and the thumbtack was just dangling inside the cyst. Like the tack was in the cyst, but like the thumb part of it was on the outside. And it made me laugh so much. So she got a little like knife scalpel thing, and she cut it open a little bit more, and then she squeezed it. And as she was squeezing it, this thinly veiled yellow pus came out. It was all squiggly, and the wife was yelling at the daughter, like, hey, get the camera, get the iPhone at this angle so we could see the pus coming out. And it was so fun. It was so disturbing. And it almost gave me tingles. I was getting such pleasure from watching it. And I don't really like the ones where the pus comes out and oozes. I like the exploding ones where the pus shoots out and it hits the mirror or the wall or gets in the person who's popping it, like gets on their face or in their hair. Those are the money shots that make my pupils expand. Those are the ones that make me just keep searching for new ones that are even more explosive and gruesome. it's a pimple popping videos and it's a Attitude Era wrestling videos that I need to actively silent or not look at online, because if I do, my day is over. That was pretty disgusting. Let's get into something I found on a subreddit for Cancun, Mexico. Anyone else stranded? ? With the flight cancellations, we aren't sure what to do. Stuck at the airport with no indication when flights will start moving again. I can imagine the backlog of people to get on flights will be a couple of days. This is an easy answer. You want to take yourself, your family, or whoever you're with and leave the airport ASAP. You get the phone number of whatever your airline is and go straight back to your hotel. Ask the front desk lady if they have any room, if it's possible for you to get a discount because, you know, the flight cancellations. Good chances are going to be that the rooms are going to be booked because probably everyone else's flights are canceled as well. I'm not sure why they're canceled. Maybe bad weather. But whatever the case, everyone's trying to go back to hotel. That's fine. Just hang out by the pool. Hang out by the beach. The servers, they've seen you there all week, so they're not going to think anything different of seeing you again. So no one's going to, you know, do a search and seizure on you. What you want to do is just slip the concierge lady, slip her an American 100, a Benjamin, and just do that. And then she'll probably let you sleep on a lounge chair in the lobby or by the poolside that night or forever many nights you're going to be there. B-Man, learn how to talk. So yeah, for the next 48 hours or so, just sip those cold, cool pina coladas or what other colorful tropical drinks you enjoy. Do that. Work on your golden tan for the next 48 hours and enjoy life. I mean, yeah, you're going to be out another $1,000, but hey, of all the places to be stuck, Cancun, it's not the worst place to be stuck. This isn't, you know, bumfuck Canada or Buffalo. You're in a hot tropical area, so keep living. Call your boss. Get some updates from the airport whenever you can, and just keep getting those rays, baby. Keep getting those rays. What I want to do, though, and I am going to do, and this is separate than the advice I just gave you, is I need to give you a scolding for being in Cancun in the first place. Cancun is a young man's game. It's a young person's location. I'll say 25 and under for Cancun. There's a good chance whatever your hotel room probably had a remnant of the smell of a vomit, probably from the previous guest who drank too much well tequila at Senior Frogs the night before they left. And that's why, you know, you got that vomit smell in your hotel room. It's not a place for you to be. You know, it's for college kids. It's for bad hangovers. It's a party scene. It's not a place to go to relax and reside with yourself and your family. There's really no culture in Cancun. That's my beef with you. There are so many other beachfront tropical areas you could have been that are just as beautiful as Cancun and have an actual culture, an actual people there. You could have gone to Maui when it wasn't lit on fire. You could have gone to Bali, Fiji. You could have went to, fuck, even a place like Miami. You know, they got some Latins down there. You would have loved that place. There are so many places, tropical places with just a beautiful culture. And you just went to Party 101 location. The other problem with Cancun is, like, take stock. When next time you go to the airport, or if you're still there, take a snapshot of everybody in that airport. And I suspect you'll see a lot of American tourists eating $13 bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches that are 24 hours old. The type of person that the uppity liberals secretly despise. You'll see a lot of overweight men wearing cargo shorts who are clipping their toenails. in the airport lobby, you'll see lushes walking around with three handles of Mexican rum because they're trying to cheat the taxes. They don't have to pay the U.S. taxes. They have to pay, you know, when they hit land in the U.S., wherever you're from. These are the type of people you do not want to be associating with. And you are one of these people. So what you want to do while you're drinking that ice cold pina colada, waiting for your flight to get booked again, is take stock of your life. Go on the internet if you can do so and start learning about sales. Start learning how to form a Ponzi scheme. Maybe you can form one and make some money. Look inwards. Look at your moral compass and see if you'd be willing, if your morals will allow you to get involved in human trafficking. There's a lot of money to be made in human trafficking today if your morals will allow it. These are the type of things you want to be spending the next 48 hours doing till you get on that flight, is how to change your life where you can make more money so you can go on a real vacation. This is why the B-Man, I don't vacation very often. I went to Austin, Texas last year. Previously, I had not been on a plane in nearly 10 years prior to that because I like luxury, but my means don't allow me to live a luxurious life. Therefore, I don't go on vacation because I want a luxury vacation, and I can't do that right now, so I just stay home. Just the flight ticket alone would cost me a week's paycheck, and so I can't travel how I want to travel. Therefore, I don't travel. And your wife, be careful about your wife. Chances are, as soon as you touch down on U.S. soil, she is going to be seeking a divorce attorney because Cancun is not a destination she can brag to her friends about. And that really, for the wife, that sums up what a vacation is. She wants to be able to post stories on social media and have a bunch of photos and come back and make all her girlfriends jealous that her husband brought her on a luxurious vacation. But You went, all-inclusive, cheapest resort you could find on the cheapest Mexican beach, and your wife can't brag to her friends about that. And she won't say it outward, but that makes her angry. That makes her look at you as less of a man, and she's not going to live that down, so she's probably going to divorce you. So you need to learn to make money real quick and go on a real vacation to a real tropical location, or else you're going to be going to the Dominican Republic as a divorced dad next spring at the next cheap all-inclusive resort that you find, because that's where you're going to vacation. I know exactly. Someone asked me, hey, 2 years from now, where are you? You, Mr. Cancun, you're probably going to be at the cheapest all-inclusive resort in Jamaica, because that's how your mind works. I want you to think bigger. Think Ponzi scheme. Think human trafficking. Think sales, big sales. ABC, always be closing. Treat your wife to a real vacation, and you'll have a much more enjoyable life. But I do hope you do eventually get on a flight and are able to come home to your miserable middle-class life. I hope you and everybody else... No. Do I hope you? No. Let me rephrase. Bring it back to you and to everybody else. Go suck a fat one.